Welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast, where business leaders come to share their advice and journeys to success with existing and emerging leaders of America. Join us as we delve into the minds of these accomplished individuals, uncovering the strategies and insights that have propelled them to the top. Whether you're an established leader or an emerging force in the business world, this podcast is your go-to source for the knowledge and inspiration needed to navigate the dynamic landscape of American business. Now, here's your host, Dylan Bloyd.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast. Today, we're honored to host Don Ward, the visionary CEO and founder of Londres Corporation, a trailblazing force in precision technology for the hospitality industry. With a background working with tech giants like Microsoft and IBM, Don brings unparalleled expertise to his role at Londres. Under his leadership, Londres has revolutionized inventory management for industry leaders such as IHG, Hilton, and Hyatt. Join us as we explore the entrepreneurial journey, fundraising strategies, and the future of inventory management with the visionary mind behind Londres Corporation. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hey, thanks, man. No doubt. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I've been excited about this conversation, so glad to have you on. So if you could please give us a brief intro on yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. So hello, everyone that's listening. My name is Don Ward, CEO of Londres Corporation, based out of Austin, Texas, and started my startup, Dylan, back in 2017. And prior to 2017, I was a sales rep, an enterprise sales rep at companies like Microsoft, IBM, and VMware, and really got the idea and impetus from starting a startup as a result of being a sales rep for, you know, primarily Microsoft and IBM. And so as a sales rep, I was actually one of the initial sales individuals that went into the cloud computing field. And if you're familiar with cloud computing, it's really big right now. Cloud computing is really allowing large companies and corporations at that point, and even small companies, to utilize compute resources at a fraction of the price of going out and building new data centers and things of that nature. In Austin, I was the cloud sales rep, enterprise cloud sales reps, covering some of their largest accounts, which included Dell Computers, USAA, Whole Foods, HEB, National Instruments. And so almost over a dozen years ago, a lot of my talk tracks with those customers, and, you know, again, it was still relatively more of a newer technology, was talking to them about the problems that they could solve and the value that could be brought to their organization by leveraging cloud computing. And, you know, as opposed, again, to spinning up a data center that's going to take months to build, being able to use compute resources and being able to drive data and analytics around things that would take you months, but within hours. And so really got a chance to work with some very innovative companies initially around specific use cases as it relates to data and analytics. And so I really got the vision to start Londres as a result of this. Now, I actually patterned the business specifically around a subject matter expert in the world of cloud computing. He used to be the former president of Oracle On Demand. And in the 2000s, he wrote a book about cloud computing and said that cloud computing was going to be like one of the next cutting edge technologies that would take hold and kind of grow in terms of the market. And so he wrote the book in 2002. I was started taking off about 10 years later. So it kind of matches the time frame of when I was actually working with some of these large enterprise customers. And even at VMware, I was the first cloud computing sales rep for the company.
Wow.
Then as far as working with Microsoft and working with some of the customers and specifically around the data and analytics, the same gentleman who wrote a book on cloud computing, Dr. Tim Cho, who's a professor at Stanford, ended up writing about now that you have the ability to leverage, you know, things like cloud computing, that there would be two other technologies that would come into play. And those technologies would really lead to the third generation of enterprise software. And the third generation of enterprise software is based on the data that you collect from connected things.
Okay.
And those technologies were IoT, specifically Internet of Things, and then artificial intelligence and machine learning. And he forecasted in 2016, 2017, that within the next 10 years, very similar to what he had mentioned in cloud computing, and he wrote this book in 2016 called Precision Technology. So if you're listening, you might want to go pick that up. That's how I specifically patterned my startup and business around. But he wrote in 2016 that over the next 10 years, that the economies of scale would allow precision technology to grow. He basically stated that by the year 2024, there'll be 500 billion connected devices. And with those connected devices, you know, why would your cell phone want to be able to connect to your refrigerator, example of those type things, which you're starting to see now?
Yeah.
Why would your cell phone want to talk to, you know, your toaster? And he basically said that the impetus behind that was going to be that the lower cost of RFID chips or computer chips and the lower cost of scanning technology and the proliferation of AI and ML would really help to be a catalyst behind that growth. Hmm. And so in 2017, after I ended up reading his book, I was like, man, he struck once on the cloud computing wave. And I was an early entrant of that.
Yeah.
And really got a chance to see new and emerging technologies. And then in 2017, I saw a use case overseas about someone starting to use the early stages of this technology. And then I went and started my own business.
Hmm. Gotcha. That's incredible. Did you always see yourself as an entrepreneur, like that you eventually wanted to start your own thing? Like a defining moment that you realized, okay, I'm starting my own business. I see a gap in the market. And then ultimately started an inventory management system for the hospitality industry.
Yeah, I think I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. I won the American Business Awards a couple of years back out of New York City.
Wow.
With HTL Technologies as far as innovation. And I remember having a conversation with my mom and I was telling her, I was like, yeah, when I was like 17 and 18 years old, I always had ideas to go start my own business, but I didn't know, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody family was an entrepreneur. And so I really didn't have those skill sets. I really didn't have the network. Really didn't know anyone. And so went to college, graduated from the University of North Texas with a degree in engineering technology, had various jobs throughout my career that leveraged technology. But in terms of being, you know, introduced to a entrepreneur ecosystem or a startup ecosystem, that really didn't happen until I moved to Austin in the 2010 to 2012 range. And I just got really fortunate to be in a city that was growing at that time. And as far as the entire ecosystem around Austin, it was going through, you know, a lot of changes then. Mm-hmm. You had Capital Factory, which is kind of like an incubator and ecosystem for new and emerging startups to kind of come together. And so that started emerging. And so it started, Austin really started changing from being more of a government, you know, Austin's obviously the state capital of Texas, but being mm-hmm. more government and education based to being more technology based. And so when I moved here to work for a technology company. And I remember people were like, why are you moving to Austin? That's not a really, you know, it's not a tech place. But then you fast forward over the last, you know, 14 years, you got big players like Dell that was starting to emerge. Then you have Tesla that moved here with Elon Musk and all of these other companies. And I think the combination of being younger and really having that drive and then, you know, being able to work in the corporate world for many years and then being in Austin, it was the right time at the right place.
Gotcha.
To where I was able to see these emerging technologies. I was in a city that was starting to embrace technology as far as startups related. And then when I saw the idea back in 2017, it kind of gave me the courage to go out there and take what I'd been seeing just through working in tech and apply that to myself. I was also in sales. And so I just kind of got to the point to where I was like, you know what? I've made other people a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can make myself and make myself a lot of money.
Right. Yeah. That's very interesting because I think that's what happens a lot is people get comfortable in these positions. You were in high level positions with those great companies and it gets comfortable. And so trying to get out of that comfort zone and starting your own thing is a huge leap of faith. Kudos to you. This is great to see your success. So you speak a lot about fundraising and the importance of fundraising, and you've had massive success within fundraising, especially with your business in Laundress, having raised over $4 million to support your mission. So what strategies or approaches have you found most effective in securing funding, especially for the early stage startups like Laundress? And what advice would you offer to other entrepreneurs who are navigating the fundraising process for their ventures?
Yeah, so I've actually raised over $5.5 million to date. And I've gone through all the phases to fundraise through a seed round. And so as far as it relates to fundraising for a startup, my recommendation for others, because you know, I did work in the corporate world for a long time, and I always preach that your network again is your net worth. Mm-hmm. There's kind of like the double-edged sword for entrepreneurship. It's real sexy when you see the Mark Zuckerbergs and you see all of these younger guys that are going out there who, yeah, I went to Harvard and I dropped out and I started my own business and, you know, they become successful. But, you know, as a Black founder, specifically a Black founder, and going back to what I said about being 18 years old, not really having all of those type of resources in my network, you know, those are things that you have to build. You have to build your skill sets and you just have to be patient. And then more so as you progress through your career and you get older, the one thing is you build a network of people who start to understand you as a person who you can trust. And then for me, I really did a couple of things early on that made a difference tying back into the network. And one is the first two things that I would recommend for anyone is I bootstrapped initially, but at the point that I decided to go out and do my own thing, you know, being older, being more mature, and having somewhat of a network, I did family and friends raises, right? Mm. And so the bootstrap part of the entrepreneurial journey is really taken, for me, I took a large sum of money that I had saved, and in preparation to going out and starting my own business, the 2 years before that, I basically paid off all my credit cards, I paid off all my cars, really got down to where if I knew I was going to take the risk, then, you know, what was going to be able to help me to get through the first couple of years, which is the bootstrapping. The bootstrapping is I'm going to use my retirement funds, which I did. I'm not going to pay myself for a couple of years. I'm going to kind of figure this thing out. And then once you get past that point, you know, and I knew specifically the technology, it's like, okay, first couple of years from 2017 to 2019, let me go ahead and start learning. And specifically for me, I wanted to learn about some of the industry that would be applied in my tech as far as the technology, and I didn't have that background. Hmm. Once I started to get to the point to where I realized, all right, there could be some legs behind this, then that's where I really started doubling down, and I started doing the family and friends raise. I built a physical component of the business, and so we're really specialists in physical to digital transformation. And in 2019, after 2 years of really just kind of like learning the business, I went out and did some research on a patent. And so the idea behind this and what we're talking about today is a patented inventory management system. Mm-hmm. And so from there, once you do the bootstrapping to the family and friends, then you start to really tie your accomplishments in fundraising into the milestones that you achieve. Mm-hmm. So I went out there and started finding some customers that I could do an MVP with, started driving a little bit of revenue. And then in 2020 to 2021, things start to change, which helps me to actually go raise some more money. In 2020, I was recognized by Google as one of the top 30 Black founders in America. I was part of the inaugural Black Founders Fund, where they identified the top 75 entrepreneurs across the United States as well. Out of the top 30 Black founders in America, that was probably about 3,000 individuals. And so that really helped to boost me. Special thanks to Jewel Burks and Jason Scott, if you ever listen to this, because just that amount of recognition gave me ability to really go out and fundraise. And so I went from doing the family and friends and the bootstrapping and family and friends to raising another $1 million to raising another $1.5 million. As a result of like now what Don is doing is really something that's more technical based. It's not necessarily more services based. And so I rode that catalyst And it gave me a couple more years of really just vetting out the technology even more. And then over the last year, I completed a seed round for another couple of million dollars, $2.75 million for the total raise of around $5.5 million.
Wow.
To get to the seed round, things said, you know, that's still showing more traction. It's still showing, you know, more of the technology is coming together. You go get the lead investor, you go get a board of directors and all of those things. It gives you a little bit more runway. And so I'm just happy to say that within the past month, just when you bring in the fact that I started this in 2017, and I think the technology really started to take a hold in 2019 and 2020, that now the full technical platform that I've built out, being able to go to market, that's really happening as of March of 2024. So it's a long journey for anybody that's out there listening. I don't always recommend for people to go out there and do this, because there's a lot of, you know, I wasn't forecasting COVID and all these other things that happened along the way, but it's a game of survival. And so to, you know, going back to what you mentioned before, I've raised $5.5 million. Now we're preparing for the seed raise. And so now we're really just, now that the technology's fully built, the platform's fully built, we're starting to expand across the United States and globally.
Mm. Now, congratulations on the success. This is great. And it really sounds like you had a plan going into it. It wasn't just something kind of just jumping into. During that time, did you have any negative thoughts towards what you think was going to happen, or not think that it's going to be successful? Or were you always confident in the technology that you were putting together and the business that you were starting?
I'd be lying if I say that I knew that I was going to get to this point. I tell people all the time, like, the way that I make decisions is really strange to most people. And I'm, when I say that, I mean that when you hate something more than the risk involved, that's really transformational. And what I mean by that, I was done working in corporate.
Yeah.
And I knew that I hated going into a job and working for somebody more than the risk of doing a startup. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of fueled me over the last 7 years, meaning that, hell yeah, you get scared. Hell, you know, there's times that, you know, if you want to talk about the nightmares, I've had plenty of those. Again, I just mentioned COVID. I had mentioned, you know, doing some few pivots, talk about near-death experience in terms of running out of money. You know, I've looked at my co-founder face-to-face and been like, man, we're down to our last dollar. I don't know how we're going to make it. And the fact is, when you really look at, you know, the odds of a business making it past 2 to 3 years, I mean, today is, this month is 7 years that I haven't worked for anyone. And wow. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into this place, but I think, or go into this, but I think the biggest thing is, was I scared? Yeah. Was I, you know, did I have doubts? Yeah, I'd be lying. And I think, you know, from a mental perspective, I've seen statistics to where it says, as far as entrepreneurs and kind of like going through PTSD and all of these things, right? Especially for somebody that's been doing this as long as I have, those are normal thoughts. I mean, it's not all like a bed of roses, but I think the most important thing for anybody listening is, like, you got to understand, I never gave up. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I always thought I was going to be successful, more than the fact that I could tell you that I was always going to be resilient and, you know, continue to try to wake up every day, stay on track, stay with the fundamentals, have faith in myself and have faith in the process. And I think that's the important lesson for anybody out there that's listening. If you're really looking at taking a leap, and like you said, Dylan, I had prepared myself a couple of years before I actually started this. From 2015 to 2017, I'd saved money. Mm-hmm. Around that time, I was like, man, it's just me. And, you know, going back to questions earlier, when you asked me if I had family, I was like, I didn't have any family. I didn't want to go work for somebody else. And so at that point, I was like, man, I can take the risk, because I don't have to come back here and look at kids and being like, how am I going to be able to go out here and make ends meet and start in a business? And so for me, just through the process of elimination, I took the risk, and, you know, hopefully it pays off.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think obviously entrepreneurship is scary, but like you said, sometimes you're alone and you're doing it on your own. So that makes it even that much more difficult and that much more scary. So I do appreciate you being transparent on that. And, you know, for the listeners, anyone who's listening, that is a great point. But have confidence in yourself at the end of the day, right?
Yes.
So getting into Londres a little bit more, you know, first, can you tell us a little bit more about Londres, what it's all about? And then also, I did see your recent post about Londres having a groundbreaking debut with its launch and of its new autonomous inventory management platform. I think you posted that last week. Can you speak more about the new launch? With that, and with that being said, what do you envision as the future of inventory management? And will this new autonomous platform help position you to stay ahead of emerging technologies?
Yeah, so going back to the early piece of the interview when I was mentioning, you know, where I got the inspiration from Dr. Tim and where things were going to be in the future and my experience at Microsoft, you know, when I was looking at new and emerging technologies like cloud computing, part of my job was to always be on the forefront of new and emerging technologies. And going back to Dr. Tim Cho, who basically said that, you know, by the year 2024, there'll be 500 billion connected devices and everything would be able to talk to each other. And so the principles that I utilized from Dr. Tim was that, you know, he forecasted that there would be a methodology that was going to be tried, chewed, and tested for this specific precision technology. He's forecasted that, you know, with the technology, you can take a thing, you could connect that thing, you could collect information from that thing, you can learn from that thing, and you could do something from that thing. I knew the technology, but I really didn't know what type of market to apply that to. And so from 2016 to 2017, when I was actually reading his book and really just trying to get a thorough understanding of what problem could be solved, I ended up seeing a use case of a company overseas that was actually starting to use a lot of the concepts that he had mentioned, and specifically to inventory management in the textile and laundry industry. And so holistically, when you look at that five-step methodology, it could be applied to any type of inventory. And so I set out to really just find a bigger problem that this could be applied to. And so when you take the things and you connect and you collect information from those things, that is mainly more of the IoT component. And so where I applied that to is inventory for hospitality management. And so when you look at IoT, the components that make up IoT are specifically around RFID technology and scanning technology. And if anyone is ever familiar with like an easy pass or a tollway, toll tags where you have some type of identifier in your car and you have scanning capabilities. And, you know, back in the days, you used to have to pull change out and throw it in the machine and it would turn green. And you might have somebody that's working at a toll booth. Then, you know, it's almost like a highway. And what I did is created a digital highway that understands inventory between certain places and uses almost a similar technology, but as it relates to physical to digital things. And so I was betting on physical to digital transformation. So going back to the problem in the textile industry, it's an industry that hadn't really been disrupted. They've been doing things forever over the last 100 years. And so when you look at the way that inventory is done for like large healthcare organizations or large hospitality organizations, being able to reconcile and all the way through the ordering process, it's very manual. It's done with spreadsheets and it's done with hand counting. And it's not really overly reliable. And so when I saw that use case overseas, it kind of gave me an idea because they were just tracking stuff that was going back and forth between a processing plant and a specific property. And I was like, what if you could create a system that would eventually just be able to take, you know, use scanners, use RFID technology, and really, you know, do it in an autonomous fashion. And that's where the AI and ML comes into play. And so in Austin, I was really vetting out the technology for those last couple of years. But in essence, what the technology does is it creates a system of record. And with the technology platform that I created, it brings the main players that are part of the inventory management life cycle of a textile all together. In Austin, I started an R&D plant and built a facility. And a facility is like a processing plant. Mm-hmm. When you think of laundry, and I know it sounds pretty boring, but laundry is the second largest expense for a hotel behind labor. And so when you're connecting a function that is a daily function, there's a lot of data associated with it. And so I created a system where I could actually track physical to digital of linens and those type of inventories that would actually go back and forwards on a daily basis in rotation with a specific hotel.
Wow.
And so that was the first step. And so I put scanners and readers at the R&D plant that I built. I went and actually started finding some hotels in the Austin, Texas area. And I was just kind of playing around with it. And so basically the first few years, I created technology that would connect or that would help allow you to run a plant smoother and then tie that into a hotel or a series of hotels and properties. And so when you put the scanners and you put the readers at the hotel, and you put the RFID tags into inventory, which is almost like a digital license plate, I created that same tollway system where you can actually track things on a daily basis using scanning technology, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so then the last piece of that was, I was like, what if you could actually make this, learn the patterns behind understanding when things are lost between a facility and a property, and then understand if a hotel loses 1,000 items and a processing plant loses 50 items, what if you could create some advanced algorithms around that that would understand when a specific property needs to reorder? And so the last piece of that is I created a supply chain module that actually ties into the actual replenishment of those inventoried items on behalf of the property. Wow. And so that's when I wrote the PAP. And so I was like, I just thought about this. I was like, this just kind of makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. 6 months after I ended up reading about the use case overseas, and I kind of, re-engineered that company sold for like $2 billion. And I was like, yeah, I'm going forward. Right. Yeah. Right. Like, this is really going to be a ticket. And so with the Laundress platform, it's the world's first platform that uses full automation where you can put scanners and readers and use RFID technology along with the artificial intelligence and machine learning to understand individual property profiles and optimize those, meaning that the industry is typically used to saying, we just need so many items because we're ordering a new hotel. Mm-hmm. With my system and with the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning, it can optimize to a specific property or a specific sets of property to where it starts to learn. This is a business hotel in New York. This is a casino in Nevada. This is a beach hotel or a resort hotel. And then it starts doing advanced calculations and around the algorithms that we have created that says that the loss depletion ratios look like this for this particular hotel in Miami, but it's a little bit different for the hotel in Nevada at the casino. Mm-hmm. And then it starts optimizing the system for that particular property and then a group of properties to where when things start to deplete, we can actually go back to the actual hotel group or property management companies, and they can actually get real live orders that are being sent to them from those specific locations. And the hotel is actually telling the property management company that I'm getting low on things and I need to reorder behalf of my property. And it will send signals, digital signals, to like a COO or a US Vice President of Operations. And so now all of the data that had taken them more or less months to get because it was all manual is all automated. The insights that they're getting on inventory usage is in real time versus being delayed and having to make those decisions over a period of months. And so now that system is what went into effect. And that's the announcement that we made earlier this month, that that first soft lunch customer has the full turnkey solution in play. And now we're going after bigger opportunities.
Oh, this is so interesting, man. So I know it's still pretty new, but do you see there other, you just mentioned other opportunities, but I was just going to ask, do you see other industries or verticals that you can see as potential markets? Because you would think this is already in play, and the fact that everyone's still using that, paper and pen process, so to speak, compared to using the scanners and artificial intelligence. I'm thinking like distribution, they're also using work management systems, WMS systems. The fact that they can use the artificial intelligence to implement, it's going to make it so much easier for them, especially being transparent to the higher ups and not really, being able to hide that information at all.
Yeah, you make a great point, because when I really went out here and was working with the individual properties, it was a learning experience for me. But now, going back to that scenario that you mentioned, this system is built to go to a Hyatt, to go to large properties,
yeah,
and basically help to manage all of that in real time, which is, again, a huge expense. But going back to like some of the questions you asked about if this was hard and, you know, did you have the sleep? Yeah, I did, because 7 years ago, the RFID tags were a lot more expensive. 7 years ago, the scanners were a lot more expensive.
Right.
I personally, with my co-founder, embedded over 100,000 RFID tags in the inventory because I was just really trying to learn them. But then you fast forward to 2024 and what's happened over the last 2 years, and you're talking about other use cases and scenarios. What really helped is you did have COVID, but more importantly, you had other companies that are starting to embrace this technology. In 2022, Walmart mandated that if you're a supply chain vendor with Walmart, you have to ship with the same technology that I'm using, which is RFID technology. Meaning that from the actual inventory that Walmart provides, you know, which would be food, groceries, and things of that nature, basically, when that mandate went, when they sent that mandate in 2022, and then they, you know, they basically asked all of the vendors to comply, RFID prices started coming down. Then seen other players like UPS. They spent $500 million to $500 million on deploying this type of technology. And so can this be used in multiple industries? Going back to that five-step methodology that I really patterned a business off of and really finding the huge problem, that relates to anything. Taking a thing, connecting, collecting, learning, and doing, it doesn't really just lend itself to doing the inventory that I'm doing in terms of textiles for laundry and that laundry business. But this could be applied for food. It can be applied for anything. That general five-step methodology is for anything. And so I think we're at the infancy and the early stages, like I was when I went into cloud computing, of this really being able to take off. And so I really see these situations and use cases being applied to multiple industries.
Right. Yeah, I can see it as well. Just from you explaining it all, I can see it in so many different areas and industries, you know, distributions, manufacturing, I mean, anything. So that is incredible, man. Really, really cool. So how can listeners engage with you and learn more about Laundress Corporation?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn and doing a search for Don L. Ward of Laundress, based out of Austin, Texas. I'm on IG as well. I haven't really, you know, the good and the bad is, as far as like speaking engagements like this, I'm actually starting to do more of that. And sharing my story, you know, a lot of people have been like, hey, man, you need to really share your story.
Definitely.
But I've given the listeners, like, if you listen to the whole clip or the various clips, I've given everyone a blueprint of what I've done, which is, you know, 7 years of doing this has been incredibly hard. And so this isn't something that I just started, you know, 6 months ago and et cetera. And so, like, I really haven't been overly confident with doing interviews like this. And the reason is because I've been so focused on building something and not really going out there and telling a story that hasn't been completed yet. You know, and that's why I appreciate, you know, us having this conversation today, is because there is a story there that I'd like to share, not only for individuals like you and the people that are listening, but more importantly, I feel that in terms of the experience level from going as a person who was working, you know, a job for years, not managing people and learning how to manage people, learning how to fundraise, learning how to build technology, learning how to manage people, learning all of those things. These are skill sets that I would say, it's almost like having kids, right? You can plan as much as possible to have kids, but when you have kids, then, you know, you just got to learn to be a parent. And it's the same thing with a startup. You can plan as much as possible. I did that by reading, trying to educate myself, but it's not like you can follow a book. Like, you can read as many things as possible. And the one thing about starting a business that's real different than anything else is you can read as much as possible. It doesn't guarantee you're going to be successful.
Right.
The resilience part of what we talked about earlier, and not giving up and just being able to have a true network of people that you can go to and help you to solve the problems. You know, as we kind of get close to wrapping this up, just understand that the journey is always going to be like, who can, you're always looking at people that can help you advance. Mm-hmm. I'm not going into all the people that have helped me over the last several years, but there's a ton of people that I've talked to in terms of helping me understand finances, managing people, all of these things. But at the end of the day, I mean, this decision-making as the founder who's starting a business, those final decisions come down to you, and it just behooves you to make sure that you really have a solid group of people that you're starting to build that could be in your corner when things get tight or things don't go the way you plan them to.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. You've went through it in the last 7 years. You've figured out the hard way to do things on end and some easy ways, right? So your experience, you can share that with a lot of people. So I do appreciate you being on the show and sharing this stories, but we could probably talk for hours, you know, about different things that you've learned and different areas like managing people and things like that. But I mean, I'm ready for your book to come out, man, with all the stuff that you've done and the success that you had. You know, I'm glad that you're starting to do these speaking engagements. And again, I do appreciate you joining us today.
No problem. I appreciate it too.
I did have one more question before we go though, Don. What would you offer to aspiring entrepreneurs who are looking to disrupt traditional industries, such as what you've done with Laundress, with innovative solutions, particularly those who are facing resistance from established players?
Oh man, that's a great question to kind of end this on. So I'll give you an example again. Going back to the technology that I talked about very early on in the call, I knew the technology backwards and forwards. What I didn't understand is if you listen to this is I didn't understand hospitality. I didn't understand healthcare. That wasn't my background. I was a cloud sales rep on the enterprise side. I didn't understand how to go out there and create software around that I could go sell to large laundry facilities. And we're starting to land those laundry facilities. And unfortunately, it wasn't fun, but I did that for several years just to really learn that. I didn't understand supply chain, and that's in play now. I didn't understand going and talking to like large property management companies that we could go sell this to. And again, I mentioned that I could go sell this to hundreds of hotels that have a portfolio if needed. Did that scare me? Because I think from the conventional wisdom, when I go back to when I got the patent back in 2019, I was being bold. And I was just thinking, like, what's the big problem that I could solve? And then over the last 6 months, 7 years into it, a lot of these things have come together. But as I mentioned about like your network, I am the guy that's just like, I might not consider myself to be the smartest, but I'm smart enough to go find somebody smarter than me. Right. To help me to address a problem. And so my advice would be that any problem that you encounter, always look at it from the different perspectives. If you don't feel that you have the experience, what can you do? And how can you go find somebody who could really help you to look at it from different angles? And I definitely think that that philosophy would help anyone that's looking to disrupt. As we kind of wrap this thing up, I mean, I took the opportunity to really set myself up from the bootstrapping because I had money saved. Then I went out there and I created a patent. And if you really look at where the patent is, I mean, it sounds a little bit crazy, but everything that I stated in terms of the technology is defensible now. Mm-hmm. Just imagine having a patent for the second largest expense as far as it relates to inventory that I wrote 5 years ago, and I didn't have any technology around that, right? Now I'm going into disrupting an industry, but I was fearless about what I created. I was resilient with what I stuck with, and I was able to go out there and I was able to find people that I could trust. You know, I'm gonna say this again, trust, because it's, you know, just through the network. And now I feel like I can go out here and dominate a market. And so this is just the true epitome of being able to go disrupt an industry that I had no experience in. I know a lot of listeners out there probably have more experience in the industries that they're looking to disrupt. But it really comes down to the networking and being resilient and being fearless. And so I think if you take all of those things into consideration, you want to travel down this path, which is not easy. That's what you're going to have in terms of your DNA. And I don't recommend for everybody to go out there and start a business and do what I've done, But you also have to understand, like, being realistic, you can do all of those things and you might not still make it to this point. And so as I wrap this up, going back to what I said initially, what did I hate more than anything else? Is I hated what I was doing and the risk associated with what I took. I was willing to live with that. And so that was my own individual kind of like benchmark in terms of how I define success. But, you know, you need to come up with what that individual benchmark is for you and just put yourself in the best position to go and execute on it.